Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. And this week, our city got a new mayor.
Make no mistake, the people of this city have chosen a progressive path.
Bill de Blasio won a decisive margin after he ran a campaign that focused on the city's growing income inequality and a rejection of the business-minded focus of the last 12 years under Mayor Bloomberg. Now, everyone is waiting to see if de Blasio can actually deliver on his promises, and that includes our regular contributors Joe Nocera with the New York Times and Ronna Fruhart with Time Magazine. And Joe, does it take a power broker to get anything done in New York City?
It is hard in New York City. And what makes it even harder is that de Blasio has made promises that require, you know, the governor and the legislature to pass new laws. So the classic example is, you know, his promise to tax the rich and redistribute income. Well, he needs Governor Cuomo to be aligned with him, and Governor Cuomo has said in no uncertain terms that he doesn't want to raise any taxes. So, you know, they're both Democrats. We'll see how this plays out.
Ronna, de Blasio won with this really overwhelming victory in the polls, but there are a lot of incumbent forces here in New York, whether it's the unions or the real estate industry, and they can really dictate the direction of the city's economy. Who's going to win in that face-off between them?
Well, I agree with Joe that New York is kind of unusual. In many cities, particularly smaller cities, I think you do need more collaborative government. You have to get a lot of interest groups on board. And you do in New York, too, but it does often require a superstar status to make that happen. I think the important thing, though, when it comes to the business community, is you have to start talking about growth and diversity. And that's something that Bloomberg actually did very well, you know, doing things like bringing the Cornell Engineering School to Roosevelt Island, thinking about how to diversify the city's economy beyond just finance, which is an important part of why there's such a wealth divide in New York, right? Because financial salaries are about a quarter of all New York wages, but they make up only 9% of employment. So I think that people were frustrated with that level of inequality and the kind of, you know, the plutocrats, basically, of which Bloomberg is the biggest one.
Well, the flip side of it is that one of the things Bloomberg was not very good at was negotiating with unions. So we have well over 100 unions that have expired contracts. De Blasio is in a very difficult position. He has gotten union support. He considers himself a progressive. But he has to negotiate as a tough-minded executive because otherwise the city will go broke.
Well, that's a funny thing to say there, tough-minded executive, because it makes me think that does it take really good managerial skills to run a city like New York City? Like you really need to be a successful CEO-like person to make a success here.
Mayors should be the least political people in government. Mayor is a managerial job. That's what it is. More than governors, more than legislators, more than senators, perhaps even more than the president of the United States who oversees a bureaucracy he can't really handle. But the mayor has his fingers on things, and the mayors can make a difference in a way that other executives can't.
It sort of sounds like we need a good manager to make – Bill de Blasio needs to prove his managerial skills.
Well, you know, it's probably true because when you think about the big pressing problems that the city is facing, so things like pensions, things like unions, things like diversified growth, education, they're probably things where you need public-private partnerships and where you need a lot of buy-in from different groups of people. So yeah, being a CEO type is probably more important here than elsewhere.
So how much power does a mayor in a city like New York have?
In certain spheres, they have quite a bit. I mean, think about Bloomberg. He took over the education department. He did a ton. You kind of forget how important this is. He did a ton with zoning. And he used zoning laws to redevelop certain neighborhoods. And that's one thing a mayor really can do. And it's something de Blasio, I hope, will continue.
Well, you know, the same week that de Blasio was elected, the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York negotiated this guilty plea and a $1.2 billion fine from the hedge fund SAC over insider trading. And I bring this up because it kind of begs the question, who's the real sheriff in town? Who's the person that can really make a difference when it comes to going after the bad guys or the people who make too much money? Who really is successful?
It's Preet Bharara,
the U.S. attorney.
The U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. He has brought all these insider trading cases, and basically he just cracked the biggest nut you can crack, which is which is SAC, you know, Stevie Cohen's hedge fund.
I totally. He's probably the toughest cop actually in the U.S. right now in some ways. But I think that both of the things we're talking about right now really exemplify what people are angry about, and that's the wealth divide. I mean, that's why you're seeing this crackdown on Wall Street, you know, across the board in a lot of different ways right now, because people are just so frustrated with the fact that we're still in a slow growth environment, that you still have the wealth gap growing. And I think that's why you're seeing both the election of Bill de Blasio and the crackdown on Wall Street.
And middle class jobs keep disappearing, and there's not really much any mayor can do about that.
Although, you know, it's funny. De Blasio could look to Brooklyn, which is where he's from, obviously, for some lessons, because Brooklyn has got some interesting growth experiments going on. It's the home of the maker movement, you know, small manufacturing. There's a lot of entrepreneurial zeal there, so maybe he can take some ideas from his neighborhood.
Well, speaking of the wealth divide, there are a group of people who are becoming much more wealthier thanks to an initial public offering that happened yesterday. Twitter has gone public, and a lot of people are a lot richer. So I'm imagining as we look ahead to the stories you're paying attention to, Twitter might be on your mind, Rana.
It's definitely on my mind. You know, I'm looking at how successful the IPO has been, but I'm also looking at the protests that have been happening, small protests, but significant in San Francisco, on the part of average citizens in that city that are really concerned that your typical apartment now costs $2,800 a month because of companies like Twitter that have created, again, this huge wealth gap that we've been talking about. I think that you are going to start to see a lot of backlash on tech companies, successful tech companies, particularly if they can't prove that they're creating trickle-down wealth and those middle-class jobs that Joe was talking about earlier.
And Joe, are you watching Twitter?
You bet. My question is a little simpler, though, and that's when are they going to make some money? You know, the stock went out on Thursday at $26 a share. It ran up to 50. It closed at 46. Highly, highly successful IPO. But in a lot of ways, Twitter is like a throwback to the internet bubble. Mm. You know, it's a niche player. It has some revenues, but it has no profits. And you just have to wonder whether investors really know what they're getting
into. Not quite pets.com, but it does need to make some money.
Well, we'll be watching Twitter and all the week's financial news at wnyc.org/business. You can take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine, Jonah Serra with The New York Times. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talk. From WNYC.